Assalamu alaikum and good morning, Her Majesty Queen Azizah of Pahang, Malaysia, Ampun Tuanku, Her Highness Tengku Puteri Jihan, His Excellency Malaysian High Commissioner to the UK, Datuk Zakri Jaafar, Chairman of Museum Pahang, Datuk Muhammad Nizar Razak, Board Members of Museum Pahang, Professors Roger Goodman, Eugene Rogan and Raihan Ismail. Distinguished guests, ladies and gentlemen, a very warm welcome to St. Anthony's College for the Pahang and the Sea Workshop. My name is Haliza Hashim and I am delighted to be your MC for this special workshop for the next 2 days. We would like to begin the opening ceremony by inviting first Professor Eugene Rogan and then Professor Raihan Ismail to give their opening remarks. Please.
I would like to extend a very warm welcome to you all, to St. Anthony's College and to the Middle East Center. My name is Eugene Rogan, and I am Director of the Middle East Center and Professor of the Modern History of the Middle East. We are so delighted to see you all here and to be launching such an exciting event, honored by the presence of Her Majesty Queen Azizah of Pahang. This workshop reflects her personal commitment to Pahang and its special maritime history, the seas that link Pahang to the world. Indeed, it is the sea that links Pahang to the Middle East, or the Middle East to Southeast Asia generally. Sea across which people, religion, cultures, and ideas, and trade have traveled for centuries. And it is this dynamic which is enshrined in the Museum Pahang. It is novel, I will admit, for the Middle East Center to partner with Malaysia in this way. It is a first. But I would argue it is a natural development since the appointment of our esteemed colleague, Professor Raihan Ismail, to the His Highness Sheikh Hamad bin Khalifa Al Thani Chair in Contemporary Islamic Studies. Given the focus of the chair on the contemporary Islamic world, it is only natural that our work should gravitate from the Middle East, the birthplace of Islam, to Southeast Asia, the demographic center of gravity of Islam. And who better to extend our academic vision of the Muslim world from the Arab lands to Southeast Asia than Professor Ismail, a daughter of Malaysia, a graduate of the International Islamic University of Malaysia, and one of the world's leading authorities in her field. Since taking up her chair, Professor Ismail has raised the profile of contemporary Islamic studies and worked tirelessly to extend our network of academic partners. This meeting, Pahang and the Sea, marks the beginning of what we all hope will develop into a meaningful exchange between academic and cultural institutions in Malaysia and Oxford that will deepen and endure. I would also like to note the role of Dr. Rowena Abdelazak of SOAS, but one of our esteemed doctoral graduates, who first proposed this collaboration and has worked tirelessly to bring together the remarkable program that you hold in your hands. While she focused on Iran for her studies in Oxford, she too has worked to build cultural and education exchange between her homeland Malaysia and her academic home in Britain. Rowena has achieved academic distinction in Britain's finest universities and brought the full benefit of her education and networks to the benefit of Malaysia. We are so proud of all that she has achieved. She took what she learned from her education here back home to build institutions there and to build bridges with us, which is everything we would hope for from our students in this most international of Oxford colleges. So with this word of welcome, I would like to invite my colleague, Professor Ismail, to take our agenda forward to discuss Pahang and the Seas, and to launch today's exciting program. Professor Ismail.
for your kind introduction and for the support of the Middle East Center, where the Contemporary Islamic Studies program is based. I would also like to extend my gratitude to our warden, Professor Roger Goodman, and to St. Anthony's College for their generous support in hosting this event in collaboration with the Pahang State Museum Corporation, the Badanan Museum Negeri Pahang. So it is our great honor to welcome Her Majesty Queen Azizah of Pahang to St. Anthony's College. And on behalf of St. Anthony's, perhaps I can say that, and on behalf of my colleagues as well, we are deeply grateful to Her Majesty for gracing us with her presence and for delivering the opening lecture of this conference. When my co-convener, Dr. Rowena Raza, first proposed the idea, and I must say, she made a very compelling case, and she is the power behind this conference. And I'm so grateful to her and for all the work that she has done to make this a reality. You know, we immediately recognize that this is an important opportunity and it's a wonderful opportunity to re-examine Southeast Asia's historical and contemporary links with the wider world. At St. Anthony's College, we are very proud to host 7 regional study centers covering Africa, Asia, Europe, Japan, Latin America, the Middle East, Russia, and Eurasia. And yet, Southeast Asia remains underrepresented in our academic landscape, despite its deep and long-standing connections with these regions through trade, culture, and religion. So this conference is a wonderful opportunity for us to bring together our scholars and researchers working on maritime history, trade networks, and merchant exchanges across the Indian Ocean, the Middle East, and China. And collectively, their work highlights the cosmopolitan and global character of these maritime interactions throughout history. On a personal note, I'm reminded of my father's own journey. He was a paddy farmer from a remote village in northern Malaysia who aspired to pursue religious education. And he traveled by cargo ship to Chennai, then known as Madras, and continued by train for 4 days to Uttar Pradesh, where he studied at Darul Uloom University, before then moving on to Egypt to continue his studies at Jamaat al-Azhar, al-Azhar University. So his story actually is not uncommon. His story reflects that of many Southeast Asian students who actually, through maritime routes, ventured to South Asia and then later to the Middle East in search of knowledge, when sea travel was the most affordable and accessible means of connection. So today's opening lecture by Her Majesty Queen Azizah captures the spirit and objectives of this conference perfectly. Her Majesty will speak on Pahang, the forgotten maritime kingdom, and explore the role of Hukum Kanun Pahang in shaping maritime law, a subject that resonates with our theme of interregional connections and legal traditions across the seas. Without further delay, it is my distinct honor and privilege to invite Her Majesty Queen Azizah of Pahang to the podium.
I stand before you today as a voice of kingdom, reclaiming the Hukum Kanun Pahang as the oldest Malay Islamic constitution of a sovereign civilization. When I speak of a sovereign civilization, I remind the world that Pahang and the Malay world it represents was never a mere kingdom, but a civilizational force, learned, lawful, and luminous, not a relic of nostalgia, but the written heartbeat of a sovereign Malay Islamic world, a scholarly redefinition of global constitutional history. Assalamualaikum warahmatullahi wabarakatuh. Bismillahirrahmanirrahim. Alhamdulillahi rabbil alamin. Wassalatu wassalamu ala ashrafil anbiya'i wal mursalin wa ala alihi wa sahbihi ajma'in. Amma ba'd. All praise is due to Allah, the Lord of the worlds, May peace and blessings be upon the noblest of prophets and messengers. Our beloved Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alaihi wasallam, and upon his family and all his companions. Distinguished fellows, ladies and gentlemen, my daughter Jihan, it is a profound honor for me to stand before this learned audience at Oxford, a place where the world is told and retold, history is constructed and re-examined. Conveying the spirit of Faham and the Malay Islamic constitutionalism at Oxford is indeed a landmark event for me. Today it listens to a forgotten kingdom remembered, one that knew the sea and never forgot who it was. I have come a long way from Malaysia, from the land known as Tanah Melayu, to speak of a great maritime civilization that flourished long before the West came in search of spice or conquest. It was a world that already knew the sea, mapped the monsoon and governed the waves with law, a civilization of pots and pans, of trade and truth, where faith and justice sailed together, drawing merchants not with muskets but with the mastery of seamanship, diplomacy and faith. That kingdom is Faham, a realm whose sovereignty rested not upon conquest, but upon law, whose throne was the river and whose crown was justice. A maritime kingdom that drew the attention of the West, not because it was weak, but because it was wondrous. Faham was a civilization of tide and time, dignified, deliberate and steadfast in its own identity. While others surrendered to conquest, Faham remained faithful to itself. It ruled not by sword, but by sacred code. It governed not through fear, but by faith. The sea of Faham was never a border, but a living constitution, a legal space, a court of law, guarded by conscience. Its ports were not merely markets of trade, but tribunals of justice. Faham was not simply a kingdom by the sea, it was a kingdom of the sea, where law traveled with the tide and justice flowed with the current. From the early Malay chronicles, Faham appears under many names, such as Panhuang, Fahan, or Pahang, marking its long-standing place in regional memory as a coastal entrepot connected to the Indian Ocean and the Laut Melayu. To understand Faham as a maritime kingdom, one must begin with Malacca, the city that transformed the Malay world from riverine polities into oceanic empires. Known to the Portuguese as the Venice of the East, Malacca was the maritime imagination made real, its harbour crowded with Gujaratis, Arabs, Chinese, Japanese ships, its legal codes written with the sea in mind. When we speak of maritime history, particularly in the context of colonial expansion, the narrative often centers on the West discovering, conquering, and profiting from the East. But from an Asian perspective, the story began much earlier. Through trade, it was not Europe that discovered Asia, but Asia that entered Europe. Through flavor, fabric, and faith, the Malay world may have lost battles in history books, but it won victories in memories, in kitchens, in galleries, and in closets. Mm-hmm. Europeans came for spice, but left with our soul. We flavored their food, draped their bodies in silk and batik, filled their cabinet with pottery and carving. The sea brought not only spices and silk, but inspiration. It was Asia that filled European galleries, wardrobes, and kitchens. By the time of Sriwijaya and Nakasuka, Faham had long been part of Malay maritime circuits, a source of gold, forest produce, and faith. And during the height of Malaccan Sultanate, Faham was both vessel and vital corridor, its rivers linking the interior to the straits. After Malacca fell to the Portuguese in 1511, Faham asserted its independence, no longer an offshoot, but a sovereign maritime state with its own fleets, laws, and alliances with Johor, Aceh, Batani, and even Brunei. Mm. Long before Western charts named the South China Sea, the peoples of the Malay world had already called and governed it the Laut Melayu, or the Malay Sea. Before Admiralty Courts, there was the Sultan, whose words ruled the land and commanded the waves. They were not nameless waters, but governed domains mapped and modernized by Malay hands. To call it by another name is to speak in a foreign tongue. To call it the Laut Melayu is to speak in our own, the language of navigators, jurists, and poets who had codified the sea in their own law and language, laws and language. At the heart of this maritime state was a legal code, rarely studied yet profoundly significant. That is the Hukum Kanun Pahang, or the Malay Canon, or the Malay Islamic Constitution. Nowhere was this maritime consciousness more perfectly expressed than in the Pahang Canon, a document which extended justice and law from land to river, from river to the ocean. Standing in the same league as the Piagam Madinah, the Code of Hammurabi, the 12 Tables of Rome, the Justinian Code, and the Magna Carta, in the chronicles of world constitutional history, the Hukum Kanun Pahang represent the Malay world's contribution to the universal heritage of law and civilization. Compiled during the reign of Sultan Abdul Ghafur Muhyiddin Shah between 1592 to 1614, it was more than a collection of laws. It was a mirror of a kingdom anchored in Islamic jurisprudence, Malay adab and maritime reality. The Hukum Kanun Pahang, our earliest Malay Islamic constitution, stands as one of the oldest and most complete legal manuscripts in Southeast Asia, blending Sharia and adab into one system of rule. It was not merely a code of law, it was a constitution, a total codification of sovereignty, justice, and faith, transforming a sultanate into a civilization and the sea into an extension of the state. It governed rivers, ports, naval ranks, taxation, piracy, honesty in trade, and the duties of sultans and subjects alike. While the Hukum Kanun Melaka, or the Malaccan law, or the, and the Undang-Undang Melaka, or the Malaccan sea laws, are celebrated as the legal bedrock of the Malay world, it is in the Hukum Kanun Pahang that we find a mature expression of Malay Islamic constitutionalism, the living Malay constitution that united faith, law, and governance. While the direct continuation of Malacca's law, a rebirth and perfection in Pahang context, uniting land and sea into one moral political order. Adapted yet distinct, it embodied a legal vision shaped by past geography and economy. It defined the duties of the Orang Besar, that is the Bandara, the Temenggong, the Shah Bandar, and all the other minor Orang Besars. It set port taxation, naval hierarchy, and protected traders, seafarers, women, and property. It punished piracy and fraud, and preserved the balance between divine justice and royal authority. The Pahang Canon became the backbone of Malay governance, its influence echoing through Johor, Terengganu, Perak, Riau, Kedah, Kattani, and even Aceh. In truth, it was the earliest written expression of Malay Islamic constitution, the charter of a just and sovereign civilization. Sultan Abdul Ghafur Muhyiddin Shah, the 12th Sultan of Pahang, my husband is number 34, and descendant of Malacca Sultanate, was the architect of Malay Islamic constitutionalism, the ruler who compiled and codified the Hukum Kanun Pahang as the direct continuity of the Hukum Kanun Melaka and the Undang-Undang Laut Melaka. His legacy stands as the greatest written monument of the Malay world, a complete codification of sovereignty, justice, and faith long before colonial law. In his vision, the Hukum Kanun Pahang emerged as an embryonic form of a Malay Islamic constitution centuries before modern constitutional thought appeared in Europe. And under his reign, Baha'i became a sovereign polity grounded in Sharia, adab, and written law. Let this stand also as a reminder of Malay modernity, that the constitutional mind of our civilization was born not of imitation, but of inheritance. In codifying the Hukum Kanun Faham, he created not merely a law book, but a Malay Islamic constitution, integrating religious, administrative, commercial, and maritime law, extending his authority from the river to the sea. His achievement predated European notions of modern constitutions by centuries, yet his name has been almost erased from mainstream history. Baham was the forgotten maritime kingdom, then Sultan Abdul Ghafur was the forgotten lawgiver. He gave us our greatest inheritance, the Hukum Kanun Baham, the blueprint of Malay Islamic constitutionalism and the codification of justice. He deserves a place among the great lawgivers in world history. In modern constitutional terms, he may be described as the first Malay ruler to institutionalize a comprehensive written constitution that governed both land and sea. His decision to codify law was an act of intellect and statecraft, ensuring that Malacca's moral and legal order lived on in Pahang. The Hukum Kanun Pahang wove Sharia and adab into moral harmony, revelation with reason, divine will with the realities of governance. It affirmed that power must serve justice and justice must reflect faith. The Sultan was not a despot, but a Raja Adil, accountable to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. Thus, the Hukum Kanun Pahang stands as both historical document and philosophical statement, the written conscience of a ruler who believed justice to be the truest expression of sovereignty. And today, as I stand before you, not only as a daughter of that lineage, but as custodian of its living legacy. In the Bahar State Museum, you all are coming next year, I believe, rests the original complete manuscript of the Hukum Kanun Pahang. Not a copy, not a fragment, but the authentic legal codex compiled under Sultan Abdul Ghafur himself. Returned to Pahang in the late 1970s from Patani, after centuries of silence, this manuscript represents the oldest and the most complete Malay Islamic constitutional text known in the region. The embryonic form of written constitution that united Sharia, adab, and sovereignty into one moral and legal order. It predates the Vatican copy of the Hukum Kanun Melaka and Undang-Undang Laut Melaka, which were later transcriptions of Melaka's original codes. The Hukum Kanun Pahang stands as their direct continuation and completion, a unified Malay Islamic constitution extending justice from palace to port, land to sea. I hope you notice that I keep repeating the word Malay Islamic constitution. It will go on throughout my entire lecture. It is not imitation, but inheritance, not adaptation, but affirmation. The mature expression of Malay Islamic sovereignty in written form. This is the greatest monumental asset and treasure of the Malay world. A proof that centuries before colonial charters or Western constitutions, the Malay mind had already conceived a complete system of law grounded in faith, justice, and governance. Piracy became not only a crime but against the state, but a sin against faith, trade an act of worship, honesty a divine command, and justice the language to which faith found earthly form. The Hukum Kanun Pahang reflected a synthesis of Islamic legal philosophy and Malay wisdom, a maritime constitution, the earliest surviving expression of Islamic Malay jurisprudence, maritime jurisprudence in the region, a proof that religion, law, and seafaring could move as one current. Islam came to Pahang not by sword, but by sailing, brought by merchants and scholars from Gujarat, Persia, India, and Arabia. It was not over then that Islam first entered the Malay world, but on the wind carried by monsoons in the sail of merchant ships. It came not by conquest, but with trade, and was anchored not in mosques first, but in the ports. Thus, when Pahang codified its law, it wrote not imitation, but inspiration. An Islamic state in spirit, centuries before the term existed. It was embedded in contracts at the harbor, in oaths sworn on the dock, in port taxes and moral codes. Every harbor had its custom, every voyage its codes, every sailor its rights. It was Magna Carta of the Malay Sea, written not in Latin or English, but in the Malay Jawi sung by monsoon winds. Pahang's geography gave shape to its laws. The Sungai Pahang, the longest river in the peninsula, carried justice from the highlands to the horizon, linking gold fields and forest markets with coastal ports. Its waterways did not just carry waters, they carried power, trade, and identity. The Sultanate was never conquered, never erased. It survived, ruled and traded, leaving a record of law, river, and resilience. To call Pahang a maritime kingdom is to understand maritime not as oceanic alone, but as a flowing system from the river source to ocean tide, from Jelai to Tioman and Natuna, where trade and law traveled together. Tioman, as you know, was more than an island. It was a living harbor. For centuries, ships from Champa, China, Arabia sought refuge there, a place of rest and renewal, a workshop where sea met forest and indigenous skill produced vessels built for the monsoon. Long before iron and steam, the Malay world possessed its own shipbuilding genius. Our Perahu, Lancharan, and Jong were masterpieces of indigenous engineering. Crafted from hardwood, bound with rattan, sealed with resin, designed to breathe with the rhythm of our seas. These ships were both architecture and philosophy, floating testaments to a civilization that understood the marriage between man and water. No European fort ever cast its shadow upon our shores. The Dutch and Portuguese passed us by, and the British came, not with conquest, but with diplomacy. Pahang was too stable to invade, too lawful to subdue, and to command the sea was not only to sail upon it, but to read its winds and guard its routes. Behind his orders stood the Orang Laut, or the sea people, and the Orang Dalaman, the interior people, navigators and guardians of passage and law, often miscast as pirates by colonial chroniclers. They were the enforcers of the Sultan's justice. Their loyalty turned water into a realm of governance, their knowledge, their empire's intelligence. Without them, no maritime kingdom could thrive. With them, Pahang seas became the safest in the Malay world, and Pahang did not merely sail the sea, it legislated it. Through the Hukum Kanun Pahang, or the Pahang Canon, the ocean itself became sovereign space. Unlike the contested waters of the Selat Melaka and Riau, or the Indian Oceans, the eastern corridors of the Laut Melayu under Pahang provided haven and order. Traders found safety, waters became lines of trust, and this reliability enhanced Pahang's prestige and made it a century of law and commerce. The sea was not emptiness, but the Sultan's court in motion. Every port was subject to law, every voyage to ethics, every captain to conscience. Centuries before international maritime law, Pahang had articulated a philosophy that the sea could be governed through justice, not conquest, through civilization, not colonization. For sovereignty without justice was piracy, and law without faith was tyranny. Before Europe came with cannons, it came with anti-spice jars, and it was our world that filled them. Gaharu and camphor, nutmeg and clove, soke and vate. They came for profit and left with wonder, The Malay were conquered not through empire, but through taste, artistry, and imagination. Baham's grandeur lay not only in law or trade, but in memory. Deep within its forests, rainforest, lies the Kota Galangi. I know Joe claimed it's there, but we in Baham claim it's in Baham. Kota Galangi is a lost city of stones guarded by legend and silence. If the coast carried our trade, the forest kept our soul. One day when scholarship and archaeology brush away the leaves and dust, we may find proof that Baham's greatness was both maritime and monumental. Even the forest remembers as the sea remembers what textbook forgot. The story of a kingdom that ruled not by conquest but by knowledge, dignity and faith. Off the coast, the waters of Pulau Tioman also hide the secrets of the past, anchors, ceramics and fragments of trade, awaiting discovery by archaeology and faith alike. In time, it may be archaeology, not colonial archives, but the earth and the sea themselves that will finally reveal and whisper back the full story of Pahang's greatness. And although Pahang once formed part of the Johor Pahang Riaulinga Empire, its maritime sovereignty was distinct and respected. Before the Bugis Rajas crossed the straits, and before Riau became the fulcrum of diplomacy, Pahang had already carved his name across the waves as a sovereign seafaring kingdom whose rivers, ports, and laws define an early maritime order. History often credits others, yet it was Pahang that held the time when Malacca fell and kept the flame of maritime governance alive. From the 18th century, the Sultanate evolved into a self-governing entity under the Bandaru House, maintaining autonomy and trade while the straits were contested by Pahang eastward toward the Indian Ocean. Its strength was not in size, but in independence and resilience. And today, as nations debate maritime disputes, stirring global tensions, borders and laws of the sea, let us remember that centuries ago, a Malay sultan on the east coast of the Tanah Melayu had already encoded the laws of the sea, not to govern trade alone, but to shape civilization. Pahang may not have built great fleets, but we built trust. The Hukum Kanun Pahang, the Malay Islamic constitution, is not a relic. It is a living testament, the moral architecture of a civilization that ruled the sea through justice, faith, and order. If Malacca was the gateway, Pahang was the anchor. Its law, its legacy, and its people making it a kingdom of the sea and a quiet architect of the world we now call global. As I stand before you today, I do not speak only as a scholar or queen, but as the voice of a kingdom that remembers. From the river of Indrapura to the waters of the Laut Melayu, from the ink of the Hukum Kanun Pahang to the conscience of its people, this is the voice of Pahang, the heartbeat of a Malay Islamic constitution reborn. May this heartbeat continue to echo across our seas and generations, reminding the world that Malay sovereignty was never silence, but law, faith, and civilization in motion. Let this be my legacy, that my children may walk taller, knowing their rivers once ran with gold, their seas with law, and their name with pride. May they remember that long before others wrote of civilization, we already had the Hukum Kanun Pahang, the Malay Islamic constitution, a mandate of justice and faith, the embryonic form of a written constitution, a living testament to what Sultan Abdul Ghafur Muhyiddin Shah left as his enduring legacy to the Malay world, the heartbeat of a Malay constitution reborn. May Allah bless our pursuit of knowledge and guide us to protect what our ancestors built with wisdom and devotion in faith and foresight, and may the Laut Melayu, Pahang in the sea, that once carried our civilization, carry our legacy forward from Pahang to the world. It is also my wish that the world, not only Oxford, will recognize the Hukum Kanabaha not as a relic of the past, but as the living testament of a sovereign Malay Islamic civilization that continues to dignify the Malay world and provide valuable insight into lawmaking and the sea. And it is also my hope that this manuscript, this greatest manuscript that we have in Baham today, our Hukum Kanabaha, the Islamic Malay constitution of a sovereign civilization, will one day be inscribed in UNESCO's memory of the world, so that its light and legacy may continue to illuminate the future of humanity, not as a relic, but as a living testament to the intellectual and constitutional genius of our Malay civilization. Thank you very much.
And thank you so much for an enlightening and inspiring lecture. Do I need to say that it was so interesting to hear about Paham's contribution to Islamic law and the sea? Ladies and gentlemen, that's Paham's legacy to share to the world.